So I basically started recording everybody. Well, it's about 10 minutes to the start of the chat. Now that we have some other people who would like to come in. Many people have shown interest. And I'm going to throw HumanWare staff several questions based on the topics that we've discussed last week, as well as additional items that we've discussed over on the list over the past week, as well as the items that people have wanted me or someone else on the chat to discuss. And Mary,
I've entered the room.
Who's here? And Mariana, we didn't hear you say anything for like past 10 minutes. If you're here, Mary, Alan, would you mind introduce yourself?
Sounds like she has no audio.
Chris G from, I believe he's from the, I don't know who he's from, but I heard his name before. He is here.
Yeah, I'm here from Sendero Group.
Oh, you're Chris Kowalski? Is that who you are? Would you mind increase your volume a bit?
You might have to check. There's a checkbox in the advanced control in the volume. I can't remember what it's called, but I had to check mine and then everybody could hear me because my volume was already quite high.
Okay, how's this?
Excellent.
Coming through loud and clear over here.
I can't hear you, Chris.
Is everyone still there? Or not?
Okay, Fee, yeah, I'm still here.
Just went silent and I thought perhaps my thing had broken, but it hasn't.
Probably all gone to sleep with the heat wave.
Heat wave, I wish.
Yeah, it's about 95 outside with an index of with a humidity over 100, but it's like 74 degrees in here.
I am currently reading email from Outlook account that I have. Give me a moment.
Would it be okay for someone to let me know how to get Jaws to tell me who's entering and leaving and all that stuff, or not?
I don't know whether... I know that you can actually change it. It's a SAPI, which is different from Jaws for Windows. SAPI is Speech API. This is Microsoft SAM is used there. Vista, I know that Microsoft Anna's used there, but there's no way for Jaws to actually tell you who's leaving or not. You have to actually script it. You have to actually use script functions. I believe Jim Knowsworthy will be able to script that.
Actually, what you can do is if you go to the Help menu in this client and go to Accessibility and check the box that says show speaker is leaving or entering or something about who is entering. I forget the exact name of the box, but if you just check it in that menu, your SAPI engine will speak that information.
When you go, each time you go into the help menu, into accessibility and right arrow, then you down arrow, the first one you're going to be into the configuration, your, can't think of that name right now. I use the other computer to follow along. Your SAPI voice, you go in there first and adjust your voice up higher. Then each time you have to process and go back to help, up arrow to accessibility, right arrow, and then just follow that process. Each time you check stuff, it'll take you out of the help and put you back into the room here. But you want to check who come in and leave, and check private messages, but I wouldn't check the major messages, but there's a lot more, but that's the basic. Go into your help, like what he said.
Okay, just a brief update. The programmer for GPS is here, Charles LaPierre, welcome. As well as Matthew is here, and Dr. Terry Sanders is here as well.
Thank you very much.
And what I like to say, what's beautiful with this TTPy conference, you don't need JavaScript.
Matthew has entered the room.
And this also works with WindowEye, ZoomTech, doesn't matter. If you don't have no screen software, it'll work just with Windows too.
To the person who spoke before, would you mind adjusting your microphone? I believe it was Charles LaPierre. To the person who spoke before the person who just spoke, would you mind adjusting the microphone? We couldn't hear you. Although we could hear it a bit, but it was quite distorted.
Roger, I entered the room.
Who just entered the room? I guess this room is getting full. This room can accommodate up to 25 people. I believe that with inclusion of Maurice and the Human Rights USA staff, I believe it'll get packed by 1 o'clock.
That's a good thing.
How's this for my levels now?
Yep, fine. We can hear you now, Charles. Okay, the chat is now opened. Okay, good afternoon, good morning, good evening, good... I don't know. Everyone, and welcome to this second BrailleNote chat. This is a chat apart from... this is a week apart from what we've done last Friday. Although we had like 4 or 5 people who joined us for the chat last week. And this chat is very productive. We have about 12 or 13 people here, including the GPS programmer, and I know that some people from Humor joined us a bit ago, like including Maurice Sloan and Chris from Humor USA. And welcome everybody to this BrailleNote chat. This chat is intended to discuss features that we would like to discuss about, features that we would like to see in the BrailleNote in the future. I think we should also include GPS features that we would like to see in the 4.0, post 4.0 release. This also includes some Q&A sessions about BrailleNote in general and GPS. So, welcome everybody. I guess this room is getting packed quickly than I expected. I'd like to thank Talking Communities for hosting this room. I'd like to thank Brian Cool Tech for allowing us to use this room. And I am recording this. And I'd like to thank Rick Harmon from Blind Geek Zone for hosting the recording that we've done for the chat. And I'm going to send this recording. I am sending the recording to both the Blind Cool Tech FTP server and the Blind Geek Zone FTP server. So anybody who wants to listen to it can listen to it. I'd like to thank Alex Parks for writing the notes down. I'm also going to write some notes down. I'd like to thank Charles LaPierre for joining us from GPS Sendero. If Maurice is here, I'd like to thank Maurice for joining us from Humorware headquarters, as well as Chris from Humorware USA, who took the time to join us. So welcome everybody. The chat is now open as of 12:01 Pacific Time, 3:01 Eastern, 2:01 Central, 5:01 Australia, 7:01 New Zealand, Saturday morning, and 1900 hours UK. Okay, I'm going to start with the several questions that we'd like to throw in. Okay, one of the discussions that we...
Man, where are you? I've entered the room.
Oh, who's here? Okay, the first question that we've asked on the list for a couple of days is introduction of word conversion, like a word support for BrailleNote users. We know that word support will be a key integral part in the next version of Keysub after 7.5, but some people express that it won't be available for all BrailleNote users. And I know that word support has been promised long ago that will be included in the future Keysub release. Maurice, do you have any info on that, or anybody would like to comment on the word support in Keysoft?
Yes, Maurice here. I guess from our perspective, we've been, you know, progressively working on word support over the years. What we're looking for in the future is a substantial improvement to word support over and above what you would normally get on a small PDA-based type machine. So that is what we're working towards. To do that, we're partnering with other people to get their expertise on this, and so we're partnering with Microsoft and other third-party companies. It's not a small job, and it's going to take many months to actually achieve, so that is the reason it's not available in 7.5. It's very much still at the discussion stage with the partners that we're working forward. We've put forward a list of what we want to do and achieve out of it, and we're just working through that at the moment. So we're still quite actually getting towards what we want, and even to make sure that we can achieve it. So for that reason, we're being very careful to say what we are doing and what we're not doing. And I mean, at this point, all we're really prepared to say is that we are looking to, you know, substantially improve word support to bring it up to a level above what you would expect in this type of product.
I guess part of the issue is a lot of people who have classics and aren't going to the MPower were under the impression that the word support would be out before the last classic release. So are you guys planning on just having the classics pretty much be stuck with no word support, or is that going to be a patch, or, you know, how are you going to do that?
Stage the next version, 7.5, is the last version for the classics. So the word support as it is at this time will be what it is for the classic machine. It's just, the logistics of the whole exercise is quite enormous, because by the time we roll out the whole new range of software across all platforms, classic, PK, MPower, it becomes a big exercise. And, you know, to write the code so that it's compatible with all devices will probably inevitably mean that we would be leaving bits out for the classic that, you know, for the classic that wouldn't, it just wouldn't be able to support. So this is the decision that we've made, that that the word support will go in the next release, which will be for the MPower and PK range.
But it doesn't even read some Office 2003 documents, and we're now in 2007. What's been going on? Why is that?
The underneath thing that we use is the Microsoft Word Converter, so it tends to perform as well as that performs, and that's the shortened end of it, really.
Yeah, it's just, I think, as far as I know anyway, that the PackMate will open Word Office 2003 stuff, so I'm just wondering why it was. I mean, I've got an MPower now, so I won't bother me, but it would if I still had the Classic. I'd be quite annoyed.
I mean, we cope with 2003 documents. There can be issues because we're at Windows C4 that the word converters in later versions of CE may perform better. So there's little things like that. But in general, as I say, we just basically use the tools that are provided by Microsoft, and that's the reason in the next round we are looking to sort of broaden that net to get past what they provide as standard sort of features.
Okay, and this allows me to actually go to the next topic that we discussed last week. Do you have any information about upgrading to either CE5 or CE6 in the near future? And second, do you have any words as to why the Brown frequently locks up and says not enough storage is available to process the command? And from according to my researches, it was found that the process limit is plaguing the Brown node, causing the Brown node to freeze. And my bet is that it is my suggestion for the human development team is that they should invest in some form of virtual memory space to allow CE kernel to use more virtual memory, like say more than let's say currently CE 4.2 kernel supports up to 32 megabytes of virtual memory, but CE 6 kernel supports up to 2 gigabytes. Is there any a solution to the not enough storage error that is given in KeySoft 7.2x? And second, is there any foreseeable information about upgrading the operating system to CE 5 or 6 in the near future?
Investigating 5 and 6, and I think, you know, if there is a change, it will be to 6. There's not much point going to 5 at this stage. And as you say, Joseph, the big advantage is the increased virtual memory to work with. The people that use Eloquence will have noticed that sometimes if you're doing heavy browsing, Eloquence will start to stutter, and that is a direct result of the virtual memory. So yes, we are looking at the upgrade to CE6. At this stage, that's all we can say.
Anyone else have any comments to throw out?
Yeah, there are a lot of small issues that have cropped up, especially after Keysoft 7.7, but really after 7.2, even with build 47. A lot of small stabilization things, especially in keymail. Like sometimes the Braille note will erase an email instead of sending it. It'll insert what I found out, thanks to Joseph last week. Apparently they're control characters, and those will be inserted into email addresses. So instead of being sent to whoever you sent it to, it gets returned. Then you have to send the whole thing again. There are just a lot of small things like that. Sometimes when you free database space, you'll delete a few hundred email, it'll say 0 bytes freed. You delete one email, a little while later you free database space and it frees up a whole bunch. I don't know what's up with that. Just a lot of small things that you always run into in Keysoft that have been there for a while, some that are new. Is there any plan to stabilize a lot of things?
I guess there'll be a limit to what gets done in 7.5 just because of the time constraints, but we have sort of got all those things on our Test Track Pro database here, so we're aware of reports coming in. We're probably going to have to come out to the community and find out more about the issue of the deletion of emails, because we don't seem to have much information on that in our own with internal database. The question of the adding the characters, and we understand that some people had issues when they've been replying to emails off the Braille note list, and it's been adding or spaces or whatever, some form of control character back into the return address, which then has caused that address to bounce back. So we have logs of those, and we're in the process of just going through verifying those things. So the situation in real life is that if we can duplicate the problem, we can, you know, usually fix it relatively easily. The biggest problem is duplicating the issue. So if people have got any information on that deletion of emails that they could forward through, that would certainly help the programming people.
I've heard stuff about a debugging in Keysoft. Would that help you guys at all? I don't quite know what it's for, what it does, but would it help for anyone to use it?
The biggest thing that we can get is just very detailed examples of when something went wrong, and then we can try to sort of duplicate that situation ourselves. There is a POP log and a SMTP log created, which retains the sort of most recent email transactions. Sometimes if people have issues with email, we ask them to send those logs through, and from that sometimes we can determine where the breakdown in the actual process was, but not always. But it is a sort of a log that is available there.
Is that what the log on and log off message is about, to turn on and turn off the trace logging on the SMTP and POP transactions and communications? Is that what it is?
Sort of a hidden menu item in the setup menu of the email, and if you just push the letter L, it'll say log on, log off. When logged on, it creates two files in the root directory of the flash disk called, I think it's log.txt and smtlog.txt.
People, do you have any other comments? Tiffany, Matthew, Jerry, Robert, Derek, and others?
I've got something about it working with a mobile phone as a modem, but it's said that Maurice Sloan's just left the room, so perhaps... Oh, he's back. Would it be okay to ask about the phones as modems now, or would you want me to ask about that later?
Missed a bit in between there. I must have had some sort of virtual memory dropout. I lost everything and had to re-log in again with a message to say, do you want to send this to Microsoft? So could you perhaps repeat where we were? Thank you.
Well, Joseph said, did we have any other comments? I wanted to ask about using mobile phone as a modem, because at the moment I get told, oh yeah, you can do that if you ring, if you dial a number, an old-fashioned, over here it'd be 0845 number, but there, if as you all know, if you've got a phone, it's now all GPS and 3G, and that doesn't work like that anymore. You have to do, the number is *99#, and the Braille note doesn't seem to like it at all. And in fact, on the Braille Note QT, the M-Power version anyway, there isn't a hash key. What's going on there? I have to put it into computer Braille mode to do a hash symbol. I couldn't believe that. I was quite shocked.
The hash key is number sign, shift 3. I know that Chris Grabowski knows this. Chris, do you have any ideas?
No, that's the pound sign. It's not the hash. It doesn't work as the hash, because that's what HumanWare told me in the UK, and I told them it didn't work.
Yeah, I haven't gotten my T-Mobile phone to work with as a modem on the Braille Note, so I just gave up on that.
It's the type of cards that pop in and give you mobile access to your IP provider.
What, you're saying we should have to buy another piece of equipment as well, when we've already got a phone and we've got Bluetooth, which should work?
So at this stage is that we're aware of changing technologies, and we just have to test them and look at them as they come. That's all we can do.
Well, I have been able to do it a few times, but a lot of the time when I try and get on the thing, it says connections, login successful, connection successful, and then straight away again it says disconnected. And the other thing that often happens to me is that I'll be browsing with the one phone that I can use, except the other day that decided it wasn't going to work anymore. But anyway, it's an old phone, that's not the issue. But the other thing that often happened was that Bluetooth would suddenly turn itself off for no particular reason. That's a stability thing, I think, with the Bluetooth. I think that really needs addressing, rather than going, oh, it's all right, there's a workaround of having this card. I mean, they're quite expensive, you know, and if you've already had to buy a compact flash wireless card, and, you know, the unit, the Braille Note itself is quite a lot of money, albeit good value, it still costs a lot of money if you have to find it. And then now you're saying, oh, if you want mobile internet access, you have to buy this thing. It's kind of frustrating.
This is just one of the issues of keeping up with technology. It's difficult for everyone, the providers, the consumer. It's just an issue that everyone has to work through, and we do try to make equipment compatible with our equipment. Probably on the Bluetooth thing, supposedly under changing up to the later versions of Windows CE, there is improved Bluetooth stability. We actually had to do a lot of work of our own in the Bluetooth for 4.2, because quite frankly the Microsoft 4.2 Bluetooth support is abysmal, and so the Bluetooth is actually quite a bit different to what Windows CE 4. So we did do tests on 5, and we didn't think that 5's Bluetooth support was that much better than our own. So we haven't really done enough testing on 6 to see what the stability improvements are.
And yeah, thanks for reintroducing the topic that we discussed last week. And this allows me to pose yet several other questions. Do you have any information as to integrating audio and object exchange OBEX protocol in the Bluetooth stack in the future? And second, I have noticed, and several people noticed on the Braille Note list, I know the GPS list also noticed that, when you pair a device, for example, mobile phone, the display says mobile phone paired. And if you no longer use the device, and if you leave the room for some other reason, when you come back, it'll still say, even the mobile phone is turned off, or the format, if any Bluetooth device is turned off, it'll still say mobile phone -paired. And if you press enter on that, it'll say remove parent or activate. If someone presses R to remove it, in rarest occasion, it still says mobile phone paired. And if one presses enter again to remove it, then the pair sign is gone. Is there any solutions to this?
Not aware of that sort of operational thing, so I can't really comment. One comment I can make on your earlier question about the audio and object sharing, that is a benefit of the Windows C6 base, that those activities should be more readily supported.
How about the sending and receiving of files? Will that be supported as well? But via Bluetooth, I mean.
Yes, that is also called object exchange. Object exchange includes sending of files, contacts, email lists, etc. And for Charles specifically, any like a GPS engine improvements in regard to communication between Bluetooth GPS receiver and Zebrano and a GPS 4.0?
How's my level here? Is it okay? It seems to be a little bit loud, but maybe not.
You sound okay. You're kind of tinny, though. That might just be your mic, but you sound okay, if not a bit quiet.
All right, no problem. I've been having issues with this tinniness of this mic. I don't know. My voice is a lot lower than that. We've done a lot of work. We've been working with HumanWare, and actually HumanWare has given me some of their Bluetooth code. I briefly looked at it, and it is quite complicated, and decided I will leave the expertise with HumanWare on that front and not try to reinvent the wheel myself. So as far as that's concerned, the Sendero GPS software uses, you have to go into Keysoft and go into your connectivity options menu and activate and, pair and activate your device. And we give a whole bunch of help in audio tutorials and in readmes and on all of this to what you should do and sort of the hoops that you have to go through. If you for some reason your device is not active, we will tell you that now going into the program, so that you know that that's why it's not, so you can then go in and reactivate your GPS receiver. And when you switch GPS receivers, it will only show you, when you select Bluetooth, it'll only show you the active devices, and you would pick the active GPS receiver, like the Holux Slim 236 or 237, whatever it is. So we only give you those choices, and then it'll tell you if it was successful or not to connect up with that and start communicating with that Bluetooth receiver. And we've also made improvements on quick connect within the program to reconnect and try to reconnect to a Bluetooth receiver if it for some reason loses communication with Bluetooth, which has happened before. Now you can do backspace R, control R, and it'll reconnect with your Bluetooth device, and it'll tell you if it was successful or not at that point. So we've done just about what we can do alone on trying to make at least the GPS Bluetooth connectivity a lot more user-friendly, and you know why. You know, it'll tell you no Bluetooth devices were found. You'll need to go into connectivity options menu to find and activate and pair with your Bluetooth receiver. So we do a lot of that for you now. So I think definitely an improvement in 4.0.
Can I just ask, why do things have to be activated? Because certainly when I pair with a mobile phone or between my phone and my computer, you don't have to activate it. It's once it's paired, then that's enough. It just finds it next time it's around. Is that a Windows CE4 thing, or a HumanWare thing, or both, or who's because that activation thing's kind of annoying.
The reason is that every Bluetooth device presents what's called Bluetooth services. And it is Bluetooth services, some kind of a thingy where, for example, we need Android writer for this. For example, if Bruno finds a mobile phone, it might most likely have one or more Bluetooth services that are offered, such as ActiveSync or modem. Activation means that you are activating a service on the target device. For example, on a PC, for example, if you select an active sync service, if you activate it, then you're actually, your pairing means that you're telling BrailleNote to use this device as Bluetooth device, Bluetooth connector. Activation means that you're actually activating active sync. Active sync. So, excuse me. Activation means that you're activating the active sync service. That's what activation means. We need some software developers like Andrew Ryden to tell us more about it, because my knowledge is limited on the field. Maybe Matthew Horspool or Alex Parks will give you some more details on that. Maybe Rich Carvalho or someone else.
Well, one thing I just wanted to add was that you could have multiple Bluetooth GPS receivers paired with the device, and then you have to activate one of the active sync connections to one of those receivers. So, you know, I could have the Holix, I could have a Garmin receiver, I could have a bunch of them connected and paired with the BrailleNote, but you have to activate one of those active sync connections to actually establish a connection to communicate with which Bluetooth receiver do you want to talk to.
But surely just saying connect to one of them should be enough. Like if it's saying which phone or whatever do you want to use to check your email, and I'm saying Nokia 6630 because that was the only one I could get to work with mobile as a modem, and it would say something like error, no device or something, because it wasn't activated and I knew I'd activated it earlier, and it's just really annoying. Surely the thing should know if I'm trying to connect to it, then it should automatically be active. That's common sense, I would have thought, but I don't know, maybe not.
I know there's several people on this list, on this chat, actually knows how to do it. Chris knows, Chris Kowalski knows, Rich Carvalho, if you used it. I know that you've used it before. Anyone can answer her questions? Anyone with a cell phone who used it before?
I'll just say that this is Rich Carvalho, and I haven't done much with Bluetooth, so that's not really my cup of tea.
I've never used a phone for web connection, mainly because I don't have the phone that would support it, and it would cost way too much to get the web access through my cell provider. But what you were saying about if you try it and select a device, why wouldn't it automatically pair, not pair, but activate? That makes sense to me. I mean, I remember when Keysoft 6.1 came out and Wi-Fi was first introduced, when you tried to connect to a network, it would say wireless is not active. It would take you to the wireless connectivity menu and all this stuff. And by even 6.2, it would automatically connect. You know, you type in your configuration name, whether or not you had wireless active, as long as your card was in there, it would connect to the network you wanted it to if it was in range. Seems like, as you were saying, Fee, that it should do the same thing for Bluetooth. You know, if it's a device, if it's paired, activated automatically. It makes sense to me. Maybe there's some technical reason it can't be done. I don't know, but that would make a lot more sense and be a lot more convenient in a lot of cases. If I could pose a question, though, mainly to Sendero staff. I'm using Computer Braille. Sort of a long story, but I've used Computer Braille for a few years now, and I'm just a lot more used to it. I can hardly write grade 2 anymore. But every time I try and pair with my Blue Logger, I type in my activation code. It says failed to pair. I type it in again. It pairs. Every single time I have to do it twice for no apparent reason. Any thoughts on that?
Actually, I wanted to comment, first of all, about the, take the GPS receiver, for example. If I search for the Holix GP Slim and it comes up with Active Sync and then it comes up with Printer, it shouldn't automatically choose Active Sync, although Printer doesn't make sense for a GPS receiver, but the service is actually there. And as far as your pairing question, you're using Computer Braille, so are you dropping the numbers without a number sign?
Well, odd as it sounds, I'm using a Spanish Computer Braille table instead of an English one, mainly because I'm still taking a Spanish class, but I was taking it at the time, and to get all the accents and things more easily, I just switched to Spanish Computer Braille, learned that, and never learned the English version of it. But I know I'm typing it in right, I mean, it's just four zeros, which is same as an ING sign. And I always look at it really carefully to make sure, okay, did I do it right? I always do. It still says failed to pair instantly. I just hit enter, failed to pair, do it again, hit enter. It waits about, I don't know, 2 or 3 seconds, and then it says paired.
That would be a HumanWare question, not a Sendero question then.
Yeah, I've had that with phones as well.
I always wanted to know, since 99% of the activation codes is 0000, why doesn't, when you select Active Sync, HumanWare just automatically send 000, you know, by default? And if that doesn't work, then ask the user what the pairing code really is.
That'll probably introduce some other bug that we haven't even thought of the existence of until it happened, though.
Put the question to our guys that are sort of more involved in the Bluetooth side of it, and just sort of try and summarise what we've talked about here, and report back's probably the best thing. It's not an area that I'm 100% familiar with myself, apart from sort of using it to pair with printers and phones and bits and pieces. So I'll talk to Rob, who's done most of the development exercise on this, and try and get some more in-depth understanding of it.
I have two questions. Is HumanWare ever going to consider the syncing of email using T-Sync? Because I must say it's very, very useful to sync the planner and Keylist applications, but I think email would be excellent. I wonder if that's been considered. And also, embossing, I don't know many Braille printers that have USB ports. Mine is a parallel port. Are there converters that one can get? Because I have it Empower, and I've been searching long and hard, and I've been very much unsuccessful. Can you comment on those two things? Anybody?
Rich, you're very quiet.
I know that I've used the Romeo 25 or Bruno before. You might want to check out AdSport USB converter if you want to. Or you can use a Bluetooth parallel converter to convert a parallel port into Bluetooth. Yeah, we have asked email synchronization with Microsoft Outlook before. We have asked several years now, and there was no word from HumanWare about it. And also in line with Keymail, I don't know whoever mentioned it. Someone mentioned support for HTML email. And HTML email. I know that CE6 does support it. And do you have any comments about Keymail synchronization and HTML email support?
Way back in the beginning with KeySync, it was intended to provide the email synchronization. It's just something that we haven't progressed with. When we first did KeySync with the Windows CE that we were using at that time, there was no support in that for synchronization. So we basically wrote our whole own synchronization system. Since then, Windows CE has caught up with us, and so we're in a situation now where we're still using our code, whereas it would probably be better now to switch over to using the base code. Our philosophy, if possible, is to use the code that's provided by Microsoft, and we specialize in writing our user interface to make it easy or transparent to the user to achieve what they want. At this stage, it's on the list of wish things. That's really all I can say. We're aware it's an item that people wish to do. And the version after this, which has normally become known as version 8, there is quite a few improvements to the email system targeted in there. And while at this stage I can't say what they all are, obviously HTML support has got to be high on that list.
And do you have any plans to support IMAP for email accounts, Internet Mail Access Protocol version 4.0 account support in Keymail in some future?
To answer that at the moment, Joseph, I'd have to go back and check with the developers on that one.
Do you know also when WPA is going to be supported? Because web encryption on wireless is really It's not worth doing, to be honest. It's very easy to crack. I don't know how to do it, but I understand from my college studies that it's not very difficult at all to crack.
Again, that is a good reason for going up to Windows C6, because they do support the higher security levels for Wi-Fi.
Okay, Lois, welcome to the chat. Yes, WPA and WPA PSK, WPA do definitely require CE6 kernel to be installed.
Hi, all, and hi, Joseph. Thanks for getting this thing together. Luckily, I got home in time to at least be here for part of it.
Your volume is really low, by the way. You might want to turn up your mic gain some.
And right now, people who didn't talk for a while, would you mind introduce yourself? Derek Roberts, Robert, who I don't know who it is, Robert Stigel? I don't know how to pronounce your name. Mike, Matthew, Tiffany. Would you mind introduce yourself if you can? Because we didn't hear some things from you for like 30 minutes now.
Oh, I don't know if you can hear me or not. I just figured out how to use this, the keys on this thing.
Hi, yeah, we can hear you.
Before I talk, you just hold down the control key if you want to talk, and you can release it after you're finished. And the next question that I'd like to pose, this has been discussed before in the last week's chat and on the list for a long time. Rose Combs brought this last week. Is there any word from Humanware regarding software development kit for Braille Note family of products? I heard that this has been discussed since 2001 when Braille Note has been released a year earlier. And is there any progress on any developing and we're releasing at least SDK compiler for Braille Note? I know that in later version of CE, it is the .NET Compact Framework is supported. And is there any way to support writing Compact Framework code and then compiling it so the Keysoft can use it?
The SDK, as you say, has been on the wish list for several years, and it's had quite a few iterations in our company. I guess the hopeful thing is that it is still on the wish list, and it has been the subject of a recent revision. So it's still in there. It's been looked at, and we obviously see the advantages of having an SDK where people can write applications. At this stage, that's about really all I can say. So I think on the positive side, we haven't given up hope on this, of ever giving an SDK. We do see the advantages of having it, and it is on our sort of priority schedule.
Well, that's good, because it's quite frustrating sometimes when you need drivers for things that you think would work, but there's no driver, so you can't use it. So if there was an SDK, I don't think it's something I'd be able to do myself, but you know, if there were other blind people who used similar things, they might be kind and let us use their drivers and for stuff, and that'd be quite nice. And it would also be nice to be able to use other things like Skype and MSN, which I don't know if there are any plans for that. I suppose you can't, because Keysoft is sort of a different operating system. Obviously, you can't just stick Pocket Skype on it. But is there any plans for a chat type? Is there any anything about the, you know, plans about introducing a chat type program? Because we actually use that in one of our projects. We had to do a collaborative project, so it could be used in education as well, which would be good.
I know the KeyChat has been mentioned before. Out of the ex-Jonathan, I don't know, I heard from someone who was telling an anecdote that Jonathan Mosen accidentally went into what's called KeyChat menu for some apparent reason. anyone? I know that there was a huge debate under the list as to what features we can expect from yet unnamed, what's called KeyChat, that was discussed as a chat software. From what the list has concluded, microphone, the voice chat, I believe whether it can be supported or not depends on the code. Some people concluded that it, most people, majority of the list concluded that at least text messaging can be supported with introduction of KeyChat later on in the future. Do you have any progress on KeyChat development?
It really started as a Friday afternoon, something to stop the developers going mad. And it was when Dean Jackson was around. He was quite passionate on that type of thing himself. And him and one of the, he used to bleat into the ear of one of the developers that wouldn't it be great to have this. And so to keep him quiet, they lashed up something, and that's what probably Jonathan had on his machine at the time. But as far as I'm aware, it hasn't gone any further than that. But the, I guess the, it becomes down then to a priority scheduling type of thing. The basic concepts of it are there, and it has been proven that we could do something. What we would need to do then is sort of refine on that and get it into a final thing. One of the unfortunate thing is that anyone that's been involved with program development will know that quite often you can lash something together quite quickly and get some quite sort of impressive control demonstration results, but there's a big difference between that and getting a stable user-friendly application, and so that's about where KeyChat is at this stage.
Yep, been there, done that. Well said.
Well, I do admire anybody who does programming because and developing and stuff like that, because on my computing course, I'm focusing more on sort of end-user support type things. But we have to do a bit of programming, and it's so hard. So I think it's not... I don't have the type of mind that, you know, can easily sit and think about programming for hours. So I admire anybody that does. So although I've said all this stuff like, oh, why can't it do this and why can't it do that and blah blah blah, I do admire all the work they do as well, so please feed that back as well.
I am wondering too, we're talking about an SDK earlier, about someone last week was talking about developing an Inform 7 compiler.
Again, that's going to come down to a sort of a prioritizing thing. We don't really know a lot about Inform 7. We did do a bit of a search during the week to sort of see, get a bit of a better background. And it's probably possible that we can provide support, but I guess it's going to come to a prioritising and decision as to how much effort would be involved to provide that support. So at this stage, we really can't comment any further than that.
Well, a minute ago, we were talking about programming and stuff, and I love programming. I mean, I'm going to get a computer science major, all that stuff. But in trying to teach myself all these actual programming languages, I've ended up learning HTML and JavaScript. And as some people here know, I wrote a little conversion program for the Braille Note. Since there isn't a real one, I figured why not just have a JavaScript one instead. But in several situations, it not only for that, but for other things I've done for the Braille Note in JavaScript, it would have been really nice for OnFocus, OnBlur, OnChange, OnKeyPress, OnSelect, all that stuff, OnMouseOver, all that to be supported. Is there any thought of supporting more, what are they called, event handlers for the Internet Explorer on the Braille Note?
I guess there's an ongoing work on the, you know, on the browser, and it is, you know, realized that we need to keep sort of looking at what has been provided as everyday things that standard Windows Explorer 7 is coping with. So we're mindful of that, and we will be sort of working to improve those sort of features.
I am still reading the emails right now in Gmail. one of the features that was mentioned last week was support for portable document format, PDF documents. Is there, I know that some people said that Brno can support it, others that it cannot. Do you have any information about PDF support?
I hoped to talk to Jonathan Sharp, who's the main architect, software architect for Keysoft, just to get a better understanding of what was required to for us to support PDF documents. So that'll have to be something we come back to.
I just want to make sure of one quick thing. In Keysoft 7.5, playlist support, is that only for the MPower, or does that also include the PK?
Understanding is that it's across all machines, and it's really just the ability to be able to mark files and have those marked files played. That's my understanding of how it's going to function.
And with playlists, I've noticed I've had to create M3U playlists like by writing the file. Will there be like an ability later to? I mean, you already have the ability to mark a file and everything, but can you assemble a playlist out of that?
I understand your question fully, Derek.
I just mean, like, can you have, like select a certain number of files and have them put in an M3U playlist, rather than having to write the file yourself?
Intention of the new scheme, so that rather than having to make a keyword file and put the list of files in there, you'll be able to just mark them in a similar sort of manner that you might mark your email files for action, and then it'll play those marked files.
Okay. And speaking of files, we have also discussed possibility of adding progress percentage notifications while copying or moving individual files. Do you have any information on that?
I haven't got any information as to the difficulty of doing that. I'll also get that checked out when I talk to Jonathan about the PDF support.
The other thing is, you don't seem to be able to do anything else while you're copying something or moving something, and if it's taking ages, that's really frustrating because it's tying up the whole Braille note, whereas on many other machines, you can go into the menu and choose another thing and on a PC you would alt-tab between them, but other machines have various ways of doing task manager. But with the copying thing, the Braille note just seems to get paralysed and just only let you do the copying or moving, and that's it. It's quite frustrating with big audio files particularly.
I agree with Fee. I really hope that gets implemented, especially if you're downloading a couple hundred emails. It'd be great to be able to go back to Keyword or, you know, KeyWeb or something, and just so you're not just sitting in an application. I mean, is that possible, or maybe that would require a hardware upgrade? I don't know. I mean, or could the maybe current hardware do that? Maybe.
This requires operating system upgrade yet again. This has been discussed before. Windows CE 4.2, which is Windows Mobile 2003, supports up to 32 programs simultaneously. And I know the Keysoft can easily exceed that limit by running a couple instances of KSW Media, one for Media Player, one for Memo, other for FM Radio, in an instance of IE for KeyWeb, an instance of Key Alarm for sounding alarms, and Keysoft itself. CE6 allows you to run 32,000 programs, and that will that might solve the problem from my researchers.
A technical question that I'm not competent to just answer off the top of my head, but I would need to discuss it more with the development guys to see what their comment would be as to how close a portable machine like the Braille Note can come to functioning like a sort of fully-fledged XP-based machine.
Well, something I found, and I wrote to the list a while ago about it, if you're downloading a file off the web, I know this doesn't help anywhere else, but it's something. If you're downloading a file off the web, when you hit space with E, sorry, I don't know the QT, I guess it's escape, it closes, you know, it says fail to download if you're in the middle of it. But if you hit space with Z, which is another way of saying space with E in other applications, it'll say fail to download, but your whole machine will start running slower, and that's because it's still downloading it in the background. And I guess because of that 32 process limit, sometimes if you exceed it, your file will stop downloading. But if you don't, and sometimes you can get the whole thing downloaded just fine, and normally you know when it's done, even if you're not actually looking at it, because it'll give you this invalid key entry tone, you know, what it does when you hit something wrong, that little buzz sort of thing. You can never actually go back to looking at the percentage of the file, because as far as the Braille node is concerned, you're done with it, you're not downloading it anymore, but it's still downloading in the background. You can just check on it, you can go back to the file, look at the size.
Something else too in downloading, I've noticed on some websites like blindjournaling.com, they have a script, a download.php script thing, that when you try to use that, it freezes the unit.
I mean, that could well be so. There will be things that we can't handle. I guess the best thing is for always to make sure that you send that information through, and then we can add it to our database here, and at least we're aware of those things. Some of them we become aware of ourselves, but the best way we, you know, the quickest way for us to become aware of things is when users tell us, and we do log all those events into our database, and they do become the subject of sort of discussions for next program updates and things, and if it is possible to do corrections and fix things, we do that.
A few things. First of all, you mentioned the feedback form. Every time I use it, I get this return mail, because apparently there's some HumanWare address, or I think there are two of them actually, that are no longer valid. So it says could not, oh, not returned, it says could not deliver to all intended recipients or something like that. So you guys might want to check your database. I don't know if you use PHP or whatever, but it seems like there's an email address or two in there that's no longer actually up and running. Also, speaking of email and internet, is there any plan to support Mail2 links?
One of the items on the list of things that they're looking at in the email update, that's for Keysoft 8.
Alex, your volume is quite low.
Okay, Sean, whoever you are, welcome. And Tiffany, have you tried to use the control key to speak? That the Mail2 links are also known as a send mail link. And Maurice, are you going to create what's called knowledge base, so people can see what kind of a problem has been reported to HumanWare and check out solutions?
And Jason?
Sorry, what was that?
I don't know, I couldn't hear Maurice either. It broke up for some whatever reasons.
I sort of didn't get all of yours either, so I was basically asking if you could just repeat what you were asking.
Okay. Got it. Is there any way to implement what's called a knowledge base kind of database, so the users can see what kind of problem has been submitted to HumanWare team and get read the solutions to it?
One of the my tasks, I've perhaps a bit of background here, just I've been with the company for years, it seems like about 22 I think it is, but I was the first product manager for the Braille Note when it came out in 2000, and then for a couple of years I did that, and then I switched over more into the support side. For the last 2 years, I've been mainly involved in the New Zealand market. From the beginning of July this year, I've taken on a more international role again, and I'm looking after the sort of support and for Braille Note as a sort of a global thing. So one of my tasks is to look at the whole support information system and look to see how we can improve the delivery of information like our knowledge base. the other thing we'll probably be looking at is the actual brownout list itself, to see if there's a better means of being able to communicate on there so that people can categorise their what they're looking for and be able to search for things and find things a bit better.
Yeah, because I'd like to be able to get information, but I haven't joined the list because I'm already on so many lists and I get so many emails about all sorts of stuff and I just haven't got the time to read any more emails. So, for example, if I was going to use, say, one of those cards with my SIM card in it in the meantime, even though it would kind of be a bit annoying, but if I was going to use one, I can't find out. I don't think there's a way at the moment for me to go and find out which one's going to work, you know, which ones I can get that have been tested with the Braille note. I remember when I was looking up some other kind of card, I forget what it was now because it was ages ago, and I looked it up on the website and it didn't even say anything about it, about what kind of card was supported or anything. And I like to get my cards from mainstream suppliers if I can, because frankly they're cheaper.
Thank you. If you go on, like, are you, like, what kind of card are you wanting to look at?
Well, things like, for example, I mean, I've got a wireless one now, but if I was going to use some kind of card that was going to let me use my mobile SIM card as a modem or something, you know, how would I know which ones are going to work, which ones have been tested and stuff like that? There's nowhere on at the moment on the HumanWare website that says that, and it would be nice if there was, and perhaps that can be for things like, you know, what peripherals work with it, for example, like pen drives and stuff like that. Obviously they all work, and but with things that normally need drivers, like wireless cards, it would be nice to have a little list of compatible cards and things. So, I don't know, is that possible?
Well, there's a compatibility list on the HumanWare site that was added pretty recently, I think. It has compatibility for the M-Power, the PK, and the Classic, I'm pretty sure, is on there too. It has everything, as you were saying. Well, you call them thumb drives over here, but the USB drives, wireless cards, compact flash, SD cards. Basically, if it will work with the Braille note, they put it on that list, and then people can look it up and see what works and what doesn't. I don't have the link for it, but I'm trying to remember where I found it. I don't know, I've just got it saved as a favorite now, but it's on their list. I'm sure if you do a search for it, then you can find it pretty easily if you do a search on their site.
If you go to Bruno Archives on December 2006, you'll see three posts from myself detailing each compatibilities. One will be for Classic, one will be for PK, and one will be for M-Power titled. All three are titled "This Hardware Compatibility List for Some Kind of Model, December 2006 Edition from HumanWare." I have, either it is under FAQ section on the HumanWare site, and you remember to check out Bruno Archives in December 2006 to see what happened to it.
Okay. If anyone has any links, please send me that, because or put it in the text, the private text chat thing or something, because that'd be really quite helpful. But in the meantime, Maurice, you were talking about earlier the that you could use a data card thing, you know, for surfing the web and stuff with your mobile phone SIM card. Is that actually possible now, or is that just something that's being planned in the future?
Yeah, what I was saying is that we realise that that sort of capability is available for people with laptops and things, and ideally, you know, it would be nice if we could also support that on the Braille note. So all I was really saying is that we are constantly looking at how to bridge that gap between what people accept as just normal availability on sort of mainstream laptops and things, as against what a specific device like the Braille Note can provide.
I think it would be an idea to say to your developers, okay, forget the card, the data card thing, if they haven't already done it. Forget about that and concentrate on the Bluetooth mobile phones using GPRS and 3, because that's what people have already. Then they don't have to buy anything extra. I bet if you asked a load of Braille Note users, most of them would have a mobile phone, but they wouldn't have this card. And I know a lot. I mean, I can use my phone with my laptop through Bluetooth or a USB cable, but obviously the USB is a bit more a specialised thing. But the Bluetooth's already there, so I'm sure it just needs coding. Whereas for the card thing, you'd actually need different, you know, new piece of hardware you have to pay for. So if I were the developers, I'd forget about that and just concentrate on getting the Bluetooth working right. Perhaps when upgraded to Windows CE6, and then getting that to work with Bluetooth mobile phones. I think that'd be a much better idea.
Mm-hmm. I agree too. And is there any chance to support an SDIO card on the Braille Note, or even supporting mini SD or micro SD cards, or like a supporting compact flash type adapters like SD to CF or MMC to CF card adapters in the future?
You can already use mini and micro SD cards. You have to put them into an adapter, an SD card shaped adapter, but they work already because I've used them before.
And probably Joseph was referring to Wi-Fi cards and things, and again, that's a sort of a Windows CE6 dependent thing, or 5. So, you know, you've probably judged from the conversation today that there is lots of reasons why we would be looking at upgrading towards Windows CE6, because it does open up a lot of technologies that we can use off the shelf.
If you upgrade to that, is that just a software upgrade, or would we have to have the hardware upgraded to cope with it?
The hardware is already in place. The Braille Note M-Power hardware, as well as the PK hardware, whether unless Baum releases another version of Pronto or any other version of PK. As far as I'm concerned, as far as M-Power goes, the hardware is already here. The processor is capable enough to work with CE6. We have enough storage, enough RAM, and enough storage to store CE6 ROM image. When upgrading to CE6, what needs to be done is the human staff has to upgrade the operating system, and then recompile KeySoft to take advantage of CE6 kernel, which has been redesigned from scratch. The classic, unfortunately, will not be able to take advantage of this. The processor had enough stress. It has endured stress from upgrading from CE 2.12 to 4.2 with KeySoft 6.1. PK already has potential for running on the CE6. As far as from my researchers, from my experiences, I know that hardware is in place, and the operating system upgrade is going to be a breeze, from what I've gathered.
My question would be, is HumanWare going to upgrade to the latest Pronto for the for a new version of the PK, because the amount of RAM and just the faster processor on the new Pronto would be a real advantage on the PK for the PK users?
Question that I can't answer at this stage. Regarding the implementation of Windows CE6, unfortunately it never is a breeze. There will be lots of work. There was lots of work to when we changed from CE 2.2 to 4, and it just does take time to go through and make sure that all the supporting information and facilities are there in place. So it isn't a small task. It's not something that can be just sort of put in like bug fixing. So for that reason, it does have to be considered fairly carefully.
Yeah, and the other thing is, as far as the GPS software is, our software would have to be probably recompiled for Windows Mobile 6 as well. So that'll be another version of the GPS software that would have to be done at the same time when they release Keysoft 8, whatever they plan on naming it.
Plus, I assume that if you guys do go up to CE6 or whatever it is, it'll take two SMA counts. Also, Fee, you were looking for the compatibility list. If you can give me your email address, I can send you a link for it.
Right, I'll type it in the private text thing, which I've, if that's Alex, then I've already just typed you a private message a while ago, but I don't think you noticed. I'll type my email address in there now.
Do a F7, go down to his name, and open your application, and in there you can set a private text.
And as far as upgrading Keysoft, like, do you have to have an SD card, and what kind of SD card should you get for that?
At the moment, it needs to be less than the 500 megabyte card. So that's where you put the upgrade bin files onto that card.
In addition to that, the card needs to be formatted to FAT or FAT16 in order to have the upgrade run smoothly.
Mary, we couldn't hear you at all a few seconds ago when I think you were speaking, but we couldn't hear anything. I don't know if you've got your microphone muted or volume's very low or something.
Although, do you have to have an SD card? Because I know before, like with the PK, you could use a compact flash and then you could have an ActiveSync installation, but...
PK is a compact flash. When I was referring to the SD card, that is for the MPAR.
I'm curious, what was the... Now, 7.5 also support the Unified English Braille code, correct?
Yes. That's what I heard on the 7.5 release page, that UEBC will be available. Yes, you need a CF for the PK. What CF? The upgrader file? No, it's not an ActiveSync installer. What it actually does is the upgrader will load the ROM file. Will load the ROM file and then decompress it and then install it. On the SD card, you will need the NK.BIM, which is also called disk image. It will decompress itself and it will install it.
Because for me, though, I have an Empower. I just didn't know if, because I don't have an SD card yet, so I was wondering, do I have to have an SD card or can I use something else for that?
Well, even if you have to have one, that they're really quite cheap now if you get them off the internet. I always find, apologies to Morris if this sounds a bit disrespectful, but I always find that companies like Humanware to try to charge you twice the price for SD cards and stuff like that that you would pay on the internet. So I tend to get them off the internet myself.
I'm just curious, has Humanware ever considered the possibility of implementing the Braille display, terminal mode, and synthesizer mode via USB? In addition to Bluetooth and serial?
Yes, Rich, we have looked at that. I'm not sure where it is in the whole scheme of things, but I think what we were looking at as a better alternative to that was to do everything over ActiveSync, and that allows us to basically run it as the Braille terminal and multiple things, and just using the ActiveSync medium to share all the communication over. So we have discussed that, and it has sort of been looked at in broad brush terms of how that could be achieved. So that if that proceeds, that's how it will be done.
Mary Ellen was asking on the text chat if anyone's thinking of, if HumanWare were thinking of doing built-in Wi-Fi rather than using the card. I think that's what she meant. Would be quite good, actually. But then it would be another hardware upgrade. But it would be very good, especially for new users, I suppose, who just got their Braille note, if it had built-in Wi-Fi.
But the considerations are always looked at, and as you say, at the moment it would mean there would be new hardware required to do that. And we are aware of the hassles of cards, and one advantage of building your own thing in is that you do have a lot better control of it, and you're not constantly at the beck and call of whoever's providing cards and the fact that they keep changing. So there is advantages from a supplier's point of view of building of common everyday things into the actual hardware.
Now, is the Ambicom card the only card still available? And if so, is HumanWare looking into other possible alternatives?
The Ambicom card is really the only CF-type card available. We have been looking at a USB Wi-Fi adapter, and we're hoping to be able to provide support for that as a sort of an interim thing. As we said earlier, longer term, if we go to Windows CE 6, it does open up some of the SD Wi-Fi cards to be compatible with the MPower.
Going back to terminal and remote synth for a minute, has there been any thought given to combining those two so that you can have the Braille note speaking your screen reader stuff as you're reading it and using the terminal? Not only combining those for Braille note users, but that would mean that voice note users could then take advantage of the terminal as well.
It's something I can't really say because I'm not a developer, but we had an inquiry from a client about 6 weeks ago concerning the USB connectivity as a Braille terminal, and I spoke to Jonathan Sharp at that time, and he explained that he'd thought about this, and the better way of doing it would be the ActiveSync approach, because it would allow sort of multiple things to be happening at the same time. So I wouldn't like to say whether what you're asking is possible, but I gathered that the reason he was keen on doing it via ActiveSync was that it did allow a lot more flexibility in what we could do at the same time.
Going back to the cards, if you are going to be getting one to purchase for upgrading, you really want to go for the SanDisk. So that has been my best experience with cards for the upgrades.
Whoa, you're a bit loud, Tiffany. You're a bit loud, but... And also, I have also another question that Stephen asked on the list, whether the PC keyboard emulator is already there. Yes, it is already there, but I had another thought coming from my head. Is it possible for HumanWare to include full QWERTY support, keyboard support on the QT? For example, you can on the Braille terminal mode, for example, so that you can, if you want to type something on the keyboard to the computer, you can just type it using the QWERTY commands instead of using the Braille commands, SDFJKL:. And also allowing some QWERTY keys to become modifiers, such as read acting as alt, control acting as control, repeat acting as applications key or Windows key, etc. Have you given any thoughts on that?
Probably just comes down to one of these things that hasn't had time allocated to it, or someone that's been really passionate about doing it. I think the Braille key support was... implemented because someone had a passion for that at the time, and the Braille, that's basically where it stopped. So I guess there's probably no reason why the QWERTY keyboard couldn't work in a similar manner. It'd be a matter of someone being given that task and working out what it was, you know, a desirable set of key commands, and then setting about doing it. But it hasn't. I don't think it's on the list of things at this stage.
Sorry to go a bit off topic, but how does one use the private chat thing in this software with JAWS?
You have to alt tab to a different window, I think. I did anyway. Or you can do go to the name of the person and then do the context menu key or shift F10 and it should have start private chat or something similar in that menu. That's how I did it anyway.
Yeah, the alt tab works. Thanks. Sorry for the interruption.
For me though, I'm not using a streamer though, cause so I can't really accept text messages though.
Sorry, who just said that?
Say what?
Who was that who's not using a screen reader? Because I got kicked out and I had to come back in and I've got to do all the accessibility bits and pieces all over again. So it's not telling me who's saying what. So who should I not be sending any text to?
Derek Roberts. I don't have a screen reader on this computer, so...
Fair enough. Yeah, cool.
So what you're... Sorry, you're kind of buffering a lot. Can you repeat that?
I just said okay. I don't know what I missed that you were talking about keyboards and stuff, but so I apologise because I got kicked out, so I apologise if this is what you've just already said, and please tell me if it is, but is there going to be any plans to let you connect your Braille note to a computer and then use the keys on the Braille note if you've got the QWERTY one? To do stuff so that you can use your Braille note as a keyboard and a Braille display as well if you've got the QWERTY keyboard, because it will let me use it as if it's a Braille machine, but I'd really like to use the QWERTY keyboard instead, because then I wouldn't have to remember two different sets of commands for Window Eyes or JAWS, or even if it just worked with one of the two, that would be quite nice.
We spoke about that while you were reloading your application again. Explained the Braille entry thing came about probably because someone had a real passion that was required, and that was done. It wasn't extended to the QWERTY keyboard at that stage. It's something perhaps I can have a talk to the developers to see what's sort of involved in doing that. I'm not sure how much is involved, so perhaps leave that with me and I'll come back as to what the possibility is there.
You know, like my laptop, I use the plug in the numpad key, and then I use a numpad just like that. Plug it into the USB, and then you use the Braille key. And it would be really nice when you're using the GPS.
And, sorry about this, but I was, I heard before that the Braille Note, wouldn't work with Windows Vista's networking program or whatever it is. I was wondering too, because I am going to upgrade to Windows Vista soon. What would they deal with that?
Hi, Albert. Welcome to the chat. Actually, I have been tested on what the program is called Windows Mobile Device Center. It's only available in Windows Vista Home Premium and later and above. This is the Vista version of ActiveSync. Yes, I have tested that. At the time, I didn't install Office at the time, so I didn't test it. And apparently, a new version of KeySync will be released, which will be improved. I don't know whether that KeySync version that will be supplied with 7.5 is going to be Vista compatible. And the KeyView is compatible with Vista. I have tested somehow with Bluetooth if my Bluetooth dongle works. And speaking about Sync Center, are there any info on supporting Vista's mobile device center? Currently on the device name, it only shows Braille Note mPOWER 4.20.
can't comment on that with any great knowledge at the moment. I do know that Jonathan Sharp has been using it with Vista, because one of the comments he made to me is it's very nice that you can actually open a file directly off the mobile device and have it come up in your PC, whereas that's not possible on the older system. You have to copy the file off the mobile device and bring it onto your PC before you can open it. And so he has been quite happily moving around. So I'm not sure where we are in the total scheme of things of providing that compatibility, but I'm sure that we are looking at that.
Albert, do you have anything to throw out to the chat floor? It's about 1:30, and my question is, what exactly is KeyView? I know that this has been asked on the list. What exactly is KeyView? How does it function? And what does KeyView, and how does KeyView look like on Windows, like on a screen? Is it similar to Hyperterminal in appearance, or is there like a panel where actual display things are shown?
Yes, KeyView is essentially just a application that makes it simple to for a user to implement a visual display on a PC. Some people have difficulty with Hyperterminal getting it to work. This is just an application that we've written that allows you to select your communication easy, and it also it basically puts a screen up on the screen where the visual display from the Braille note is displayed, and it has the ability to also have a Braille display at the bottom of the screen, I think it is, which shows the a virtual sort of Braille display.
Will it work with Windows mobile devices, like other PDAs, such as the one that comes to mind for me anyway is the Axum from, well, it used to be from Dell, they stopped making them now, I guess, but things like that, instead of us having to use Bluetooth through one of the Mac OS things as we do now, will it work for any PDA or only a PC? And will it be Vista compatible?
I can't answer either of those questions, Alex. I suspect it'll be Vista compatible. I can't see why it wouldn't be. But the other one, I'd have to seek some advice on that.
The other thing I wanted to ask about is the using the Braille note with a screen reader at all is, particularly with a laptop, is a nightmare at the moment. Is that going to work through the USB port in KeySoft 7.5, or is that further on in the future?
But there is a thing called USB or serial converter, which converts the USB port to a COM port. I know that either socket, or I know that someone purchased it and someone said it, and that person said it works with USB port computers, specifically laptops, and Maurice said that it is to active, they can use ActiveSync service for Braille displays and so forth. I'm going to email Jonathan Sharp privately sometime in the future about that.
Yeah, it does kind of work. I haven't tried it with JAWS yet, but WindowEyes crashes after a while. And I emailed GW Micro and Humanware, who both said I should email the other, so that was fun to start with. But but anyway, they GW Micro thought that probably the reason it kept crashing when I was using Braille and not when I wasn't is because of this USB to serial converter and its drivers and everything, because they don't have any control over those. So it would be nice not to need something like that with that needs extra drivers that are going to come into the mix and mess things up. I'd really like to just be able to use a USB cable. Is that in the pipeline or not, or do you not know?
What I was saying earlier, Fee, that if we do something like that, we would probably try and implement using the ActiveSync medium as the sort of communication medium. One of the issues is that most screen readers actually talk to USB devices as if they're a serial device anyway, so you're actually loading these virtual serial interfaces, and that causes issues all around the place. Some Braille printers supposedly have USB interfaces, but they're actually not. They have USB to serial converter things inside them, and so they don't behave like a standard USB printer. So it is actually a minefield, the whole thing. Just because something has a USB cable plugged into it doesn't mean to say it's actually communicating as a true USB device.
And also, would P of U have a USB port too, or is that an ActiveSync thing?
Didn't get that question.
So would P of U, would you be able to use the USB port with it?
I mean, one of the nice things about the MPower with USB is you just plug it in and it's all connected and it goes. So you've established your USB communication link just like that. So that's one of the obvious advantages of using that USB medium to talk through.
But will it soon be able to use the USB port as a screen reader output, whether it be through ActiveSync or not? You know, is that going to be done? Do you know or not?
As we've just talked about it, I'm not sure where on the roadmap that actually is. I can't really comment on that at this stage.
So what are the comm options then for KeyView? Is it just Bluetooth and serial like the terminal and remote synth, or will other ones be included as well?
At this stage it is just Bluetooth and serial.
I'd love to find somewhere, and this might come into part of your job actually, Morris, that I'd love to find a how-to guide on using a Braille note as a Bluetooth Braille display, because I can't find that anywhere. Maybe that I haven't looked hard enough lately, but I asked Humanware and they said they couldn't tell me about my Bluetooth software, and I said, yeah, but that's not what I wanted to know. I just wanted to know generally how to do it. And then I asked GW Micro, and they said you'd have to ask Humanware how to configure the Braille note. So I don't know. It doesn't seem like things like that are very joined up. I'd like to know, for instance, somebody said to me, oh, you can, from Humanware in the UK, oh, you can use Bluetooth if you've got it integrated into your computer with the Windows drivers. And I said, yeah, well, most people are using the WIDCOM drivers that come with these external Bluetooth devices, these little dongles you can get. And I tried to use it, and I think it was the Braille note that said network service not supported or something strange like that. In fact, I know it was the Braille note that said that, so I don't quite know what was going on there, but I just wondered whether it would be possible to do some sort of guide, and maybe with links to the different screen readers, bits about how to do that, and join things up all a bit more with the screen readers as well for use with the Braille displays.
And I have just done that. Actually, I've done one more podcast, and I've done two podcasts on Braille utilities. One on using Braille as a Bluetooth Braille display, and second using support information mode with Braille and power. I have to remind myself that, okay, I'm going to send the files, the two MP3 recordings that I've done to the Blind Quotec and Blind Geeks on FTP server so everybody can access it. I thought I'll be able to email it to anybody who requested it, but there were so many numerous requests, up to 20 requests for a given file, and my popular USB tutorials that several people requested about. I'm going to upload all of them. The two podcasts and a USB tutorial on the podcast will be going to Blind Cool Tech and Blind Geek Zone web TV server, and the USB tutorial will be going to Blind Geek Zone FTP server, so everybody, anybody can download it. I have to remind the webmaster of BGZ, reminding him about the new files I've been uploading, including the first two parts of my grown-up podcast.
Well, last Friday's Humanware chat was up there. You know that, don't you? Because I downloaded it, so I knew what you'd all, what I'd missed last week.
And two, I noticed on the lovetoblyndi.net, I noticed because all people on the BrailleNote list were saying that the podcast didn't work. Well, I noticed they do add a link now that says, I think it's like a play or stream this file, whatever it is. And what you can do with that, too, is if you go in Internet Options, File Download Management, and tell it not to stream audio links, you can download the file and rename the extension to .mp3, and it will play it.
It was a good service of Chaitan Backwood to include that as a backup option. But anyhow, I'll upload the podcasts as well as the USB tutorial to BGZ, and I would upload the podcasts themselves to the BCT FTP server. So anybody, Albert, do you have something to comment on?
Perhaps it would be good if you just could do a post to the BrailleNote list with the link so that people know how to get there, because there's probably quite a lot of people out there that are not that familiar with those services, and it would be nice if you could do that. That would be great. Thanks.
Do you know if there's going to be any a podcasting program on the BrailleNote, or would that be a great big hassle to do, because obviously it's not hugely high priority, it's just something that would be nice. So I just wondered, you know, is that easy to do, or would that be a great big huge faff?
Comment on that one, Theo. I'll ask that question.
Thanks.
The recorder is already built in, so with some manipulation of the microphone you can use that. And the last thing that we discussed last week, I know it was in the middle, Rich will remember, was the whole discussion, whole debate on microphone. We have discovered that if we try to increase and decrease the microphone dynamics through space with .6 and space with .3 left and right arrow while recording, the new value does not show up on the Braille display, and the recording keeps showing up, even though we have changed the dynamics. Also, if there will be some kind of a newer microphone that will be included with some kind of a new hardware feature, hardware upgrade.
I think perhaps we'll have a look at and just see. I mean, we are aware that there seems to be a variation that people report on the quality they receive from the microphone. One thing that I've often commented is that the carry case actually covers the hole where the microphone is, so that's probably not helping things either. So it's probably just something we'll have a look at that total thing to make sure things are working as we assume they are working in terms of the program and also the actual hardware to see if there is anything that can be adjusted to improve that internal microphone quality.
On the subject of the case, why didn't anybody put a pocket on the front to put your pen drive and earphones in?
The case has got quite a history to it. I think there's been about 5 iterations of that case over the years. I guess at the time that the first case was done, which is closest to what we've got at the moment, that pen drives and things weren't in vogue. Most people are probably using that internal pocket to put their cards and things in, and I guess a pen drive would fit in there and not be too bulky. A lot of people put their headphones in there as well. I know when it's shut down, they do get a bit puffed up on the top if there's a lot of things in that pocket there. I guess the issue you've got if it's along the front somewhere is it's going to be as to how it interferes with the thumb keys. So the concept of the case has been that you can operate it in the case, and so the designers sort of tried to be cognizant of that fact that people want to operate it from the case.
No, not the front, like where the thumb keys are. On the front, like where the rubber braille is, where it says Humanware. Except mine doesn't. I don't think mine says that anymore because some of the dots are coming off. But it used to say Humanware.
Meaning a top entry case, a top entry into it, rather than having to lift the flap up and undo the zipper as it is at the moment.
Well, I mean, you could have it closing the same way, although Mary Ellen has just said you need a slightly bigger flap, and I agree with that. It is slightly too small at the moment to go over it properly when you've got cards and stuff in that internal pocket. But on the other side of that same flap, the lid, you should have, I think, had an external pocket instead, or as well as, but probably instead of the internal one, because an external one could have been a little bit bigger and had perhaps a zip rather than Velcro. Actually, the internal one has a zip, doesn't it? But instead of just being flat, it could have sort of stuck out a little bit, because earphones aren't really thin enough to go in that internal pocket unless they get a bit squidged when you shut the whole thing.
Yeah, I'm with you completely. I mean, as far as thumb drives and stuff, I finally had to just get the GPS case for $40. I was actually kind of surprised at the price, but I can hold a lot of stuff in there. The main problem is, though, I hate to wear down my Velcro by constantly taking it off and putting it back on, because with the case on, you can't use Active Sync, you can't get to your CF slot or your SD slot, oh, I've got an SD card in there, or your SD slot. You can get to your USB, but if the device is too big for the pouch to hold, then you have to take it off. Obviously, infrared, dial-up, serial, well, no, I think serial is available in there. But some pocket would have been really nice. The only problem I see is, like, I've got my Braille note right in front of me right now, and it has, the flap is open, and then I have it folded back under, so that where you'd normally Velcro on the underside of it is facing me, if that makes any sense at all, and that means the Braille note would then be sitting on whatever's in the pocket. So, I mean, I can understand both sides of it, and I'd really like to see the external pocket. That'd be really handy instead of taking the pouch everywhere, but I can sort of see why they wouldn't do.
Yeah, but there is a bit of a gap, isn't there, so you could have just as quite a slim external pocket. You think $40 is bad for a case, right? But which is about £20 over here, I think, if that's American dollars. But when I first had my Braille note, before I had it done as a transplant, I had one of the really, really old zip-up cases where you couldn't actually use the Braille note in the case. It was just literally a carry case. And that did have a front pocket, but it was a bit of a rubbish case because you couldn't use it in the case. And I ordered, this was ages before I had my transplant, and I ordered a new case so I could have the normal case, so I could read hymns in church and things like that, and have the Braille note around my neck so I didn't have to hold it, and I could still read it in the case. And it was £80, which is $160. Morris, can you justify that? I mean, I thought maybe it was gold-plated or something when I was told the price, because it seemed a bit much. And then I think they charged me postage on top of that as well. I don't understand why.
Those questions up with the European office. Each outlet has their own policy as regards spares and things like that, so that's really a question you'd need to address to them.
You might want to talk to Martin Griffiths at the Humanware UK to see what happened. He'll be there at Site Village next week, so you might want to check out Humanware to Site Village and talk to Martin Griffiths about it. The only thing that is visible on the case is the USB host ports and serial port and adapter socket.
And to another something to bring up too is the Braille note support for Ogg Vorbis. I think it's a pretty cool format. You can still have really nice quality, but keep it in a lower lower size for a file. But it's still not supported yet.
I'm going to have a look and see if there's a plugin that we can get to make that supportable. I can't sort of say at this stage whether that's available or not, but one of our guys is having a look at that to see if that is possible.
Matthew, are you still here? Are you still here? Hello, Matthew? And Marlena Vanderwaal asked on the list, is there any more info besides the ones that are posted on the Sendero site about GPS 4.0 that she needs to know? Like any like inside info besides upgraded engine and more PoE database and so forth? Alex, do you have any info?
Well, on our website, we definitely have, from the main website, links to what's new in 4.0 and all of the features that have been put into 4.0, as well as the new maps and points of interest for U.S., Canada, Europe, and even Australia. And there's also a couple chat sessions that that we did. We did two chat sessions with the new features, and people asked questions last Sunday and the previous Saturday. And those are also available. So as far as documentation and chat archives, those are already posted on the Sendero website. And we're expecting to have mass emails being sent out to people that have ordered 4.0 on Monday, I believe, is the official release date.
Sorry, what are we on about 4.0? What's that?
New GPS version after 3.5. That is the GPS version that 4.0 has been talked about in the convention. That has been mentioned by Mike May and some people on the Brilliant List and GPS Talk Users List. Yeah, I'll refer your message, Charles, to people on the Brilliant List and GPS Talk Users. I guess Alex can pull forward that message to GPS Talk Users.
Sounds good. Thank you.
And something too, last week I think it was, I don't know. Anyway, I went to the convention to get it, my Brilliant List, like, cleaned and battery replaced and everything, but I guess they don't do that anymore. Is there another way to do that besides sending it to California? Because I think it'd be cool not to, like, have to go without that for, like, what, 3-6 weeks, something like that.
Well, I had my transplant done. This is in the UK, so it may be a little bit different, but they really, they were quite quick. They when it actually happened, they had to wait for the unit to come from New Zealand before they could do it, but they didn't get anyone to come and collect my Braille note until it was, until they'd got this, the unit that it was going to, the Braille display was going to be transplanted into, and I think it was about a week at the most that they took to do that, so to clean it and stuff. I wouldn't have thought, I don't know what it's like in the US, but it, certainly in the UK, I think they cleaned it and everything as well, so I wouldn't have thought it would take too long, although I don't know, because the distances involved, of course, in the US would be a bit bigger, but certainly they were very quick.
Yeah, I'm not sure who was... Was that Derek that was posing that question? You're referring to KeyShop, which we introduced a couple of years back. In the first 2 years, I ran those myself at the NFB and ACB convention, and the concept of that was people could bring their machines in and get a free clean of their Braille display, and we also did repairs, sort of smaller repairs, replacing batteries. The last year I wasn't involved in them, the US operation ran them, and this year they decided not to. I think from a user's perspective, if you think it's a important thing to do, you should just advise us via the list if you think it is a good service, because that's, you know, what we need is feedback as to how people view those features.
Oh yeah, there were a lot of complaints about that on the burn list. But what will be the future of Keyshop in those events, especially CSUN conference and the conventions? Maybe someone can maybe someone on the burn list can lobby some HumanWare people in the U.S. about it.
Well, I'm going to lobby someone at Site Village, because it seems like you people in the U.S. get everything in terms of the Braille note, and we don't really get an awful lot, to be honest, in comparison. So it's a bit annoying.
Yeah, like not only the conventions and stuff, but Keysoft 7.5. I know a lot of people on the list have been going back and forth with. No one in the U.K. is getting much out of it because a lot of it's Bookshare and RFBD and stuff. I mean. Can see where you're coming from, but I wasn't able to make it to the conventions. I'm never able to, really, because I'm really far away from them all, so I don't get any of the key shop or anything either, so I can sort of see where you're coming from.
And, whoever was it that was talking about making that conversion program for the Braille Note, can you, email me off the chat thing about this, because I do have Hotmail on my Braille Note, so I can do that.
Morris, would it be possible to ask, you know, to say to, like, about getting a sort of more worldwide strategy in terms of something like Keyshop at conferences? Because it does seem to me at the moment, especially with this new release of Keysoft that's coming out, it's all targeted at the US. I mean, don't we count anywhere else? It seems sometimes that maybe we don't.
This is one of the reasons why I've sort of been reappointed into this area, to try and make sure that we do globally sort of address, you know, the support and what we're providing, so that we are sort of looking at it from the top down. As I say, I was sort of the one that instigated the Keyshop things in the American market a couple of years ago. I think it went back to 2003 or something. I guess the hard reality of it is that the by far the biggest market for the Braille Note is the US market, and so that's just by that fact is where a lot of the effort and things goes into. But that is, I fully appreciate what you're saying, Fee, and so one of the things I will be looking at is to make sure that we are trying to provide sort of equal facilities as where, you know, where possible.
Yeah, that would be good, because it doesn't seem that way at the moment. And things like the pricing of cases and things, that should be more universal, I think. I don't think it should be the case that European places can just charge what they want to. I mean, like, say, for example, maybe I could get it cheaper somewhere from the US, but they'd probably say, oh, we're not allowed to sell it to you because you've got a UK branch. We're stuck in a captive market, and we just have to put up with it, even if it means paying £80 for a bag that's made out of leather and straps.
Sorry to get off of this for a second, but I'm going to forget again if I don't ask. Eloquence. I don't know if anyone else is in the same boat as me, but every time I try and use it, well, first of all, sometimes it doesn't switch to it at all. It'll either switch to French. You know, I'll have English, but it'll speak French, Eloquence will, or much more often than not, it'll just stay in Keynote Gold, even though it says it's in Eloquence. You know, it'll ask for the speech, it won't go to speech volume level, it'll say Eloquence, and then it'll say speech voice and all that stuff as if it were, but it's not. Anyway, when I do get it to work, it's extremely, I guess I shouldn't say extremely, but it's slower than Keynote Gold. You know, you can type things pretty rapidly, and Keynote Gold doesn't have a problem keeping up, but Eloquence just remains silent because it can't keep up with relatively fast keystrokes. Also, when you're reading long documents, it almost seems like every few words, it'll stop, and it will... it'll not really stop, but it'll... that's not, can't talk today. It's like it starts over at the beginning of a sentence. It'll read, you know, half a sentence, and then it's like, it doesn't end the sentence, but it sounds like it's starting over at a new capital word. It's really hard to explain, but are you guys working on the eloquence at all and getting that straightened out so it works more like Keynote Gold? I know it's more memory intensive, but as long as there's enough memory to run it, it doesn't seem like the memory should really play into how it performs.
Yeah, I've noticed the eloquence pausing thing. It will start the sentence, and then it will read the next bit. But then you could say that it's going to finish. So it kind of pauses in the middle. It's really quite strange. And my mobile phone, which probably has less of a processor and less RAM, but I may be wrong, but I would have thought so. But again, yeah, I could be wrong. But that seems to read things a lot better with eloquence. In fact, on my mobile phone now, I'm running RealSpeak, which is nicer. But I won't ask if you've got any plans to put that out, because if eloquence is behaving a bit strangely, I think RealSpeak would make it even worse. But yeah, I've found the eloquence thing as well. But no, mine doesn't say "Je m'appelle Eloquence," though I don't get the French thing.
I know sometimes mine does that, the language thing. I just didn't know what language that was. Well, I've never had it do the pausing in sentences thing.
Well, it doesn't so much pause in sentences for me. It's like it'll read a few words and then, without saying any punctuation, switch to a new sentence. You know how eloquence will... It has that subtle variation when it starts in a new sentence, so you know definitely that it's restarting something and starting over. Well, not starting over, but starting to speak something new. It'll do that in the middle of the sentences. Like, it takes a few words, processes them, speaks them, takes the next few words, processes them, speaks them. It's like it does that instead of reading fluently like Keynote Gold does.
I didn't notice that the last thing that I described, but I've noticed that sometimes eloquence will chop in and say, and so forth, in French. And for some odd reasons, I don't know why it says in Braille display option, it says French Braille table, French France, for some odd reasons. I know that I have multilingual installed in Spanish, but I don't know why it keeps coming up. And you should have you would have noticed that eloquence uses 2.5 to about almost 2 megabytes more RAM than most KNG does in terms of program memory. And eloquence is about 0.5 seconds slow, about half second slower than Keynote Gold in terms of response time, up to about a second in some cases.
I think that might be another thing with upgrading to CE 6.0, whatever it was, because it does give you more memory, like, 2 gigabytes or so of virtual space.
Oh, so it's more the virtual memory rather than the actual RAM that's available. Is that what you're saying? There is more RAM available anyway in the hardware we've already got, but it's just that CE4 won't allow it to be used. Am I understanding this correctly?
Virtual memory is a way of pretending that you have more memory than you have. Virtual memory, you can actually think of it as like this. You have a memory system that has about 64 megabyte RAM. If you need to load a file, say, about 120 megabytes in size, the program will load first 50 megabytes into memory, and the rest, if you need to load the rest, you have a 64 megabyte RAM machine, and you have a file that is 120 megabytes in size. If you want to edit that file, what the program will generally do is it'll load first 50 megabytes into RAM, and will, I don't know, for some other reason, it'll store remaining 70 megabytes somewhere that physical memory cannot access. And for some, and in some implementation, it'll region it so that part of the file will be loaded while other part is stored somewhere else. Virtual memory allows you to work with files or things that are larger than the stored the physical memory, which is useful for processing multimedia or other similar large files. The current implementation is 32. Each program gets 32 megabytes of its own virtual memory, and Windows CE 6 allows you to have up to 2 gigabytes. Theoretically, in 32-bit systems, which is the system that is running under right now in the Bronote, you can have up to 4 gigabytes of virtual memory. Memories use what's called memory translation, where it will translate the physical memory address to the virtual memory address, which does not exist but it still points to, and then it will translate back from the virtual memory address to the physical memory address. Maybe Andrew Ryden will tell you more about it. If you email Andrew.Ryden, R-I-D-E-N, @humanworld.com, he will explain it further for you, because he is one of the software development engineers who used to be the moderator of the Bronote list. So I bet most of the problems that we've discussed today, I believe, would be solved with upgrade to CE6. And currently we've done this for about 2 hours now. It's about 2:02 right now. And I believe this might be my final question in the hardware category. Will there be support for infrared data communications, for example, I.E., where you can send files and data using Bronote's infrared port to other computers or PDAs equipped with infrared port?
Looked at that. I don't know if there's any immediate intention to do that, but I have seen such things working in the development area. Again, it probably comes into that category that they've been something's been put together, but then to actually implement it in a final production release, there can be quite a lot of extra work, and it depends out on how that's sort of perceived in the total priority chain. We have a reasonable number of people working on KeySoft development, but it's never enough, and we're constrained by people and money, and we have to prioritise as to what we see. We listen to what people were asking for. We have to make the call as to what is priority. You make the call if we think we're doing a good enough job, and you'll buy or you won't buy. But in the end, it's, I guess, our call as to what we put in there. And we have to hope we get the mix right. So, and that's what we will continue to do. Don't email Andy, because Andy's no longer with the company. He's busy involved in making radio card access systems now, so he left the company about a month ago.
Can I just ask, you keep talking about prioritising things. Are you able, because I don't know how much of it is confidential or whatever because it's not been released, but are you able to tell us what the... You keep saying, oh, it depends, this might not be the next priority, this might not be a priority at the moment. So what is going to be a priority at the moment? Are you able to tell us that, or are you not able to at the moment?
We've learnt the hard way that it pays not to say too much until we know ourselves for sure what is going in a release, because otherwise we spend all our time fielding numerous emails as to why we're not doing this and that. So I guess our official policy is to be very careful what we say we are going to provide, and so we will not tend to say what is going to be in the next release until we know for sure ourselves. we gather in information for what people are asking for, what we see as necessary. We put them in a big list. We look through to decide how much time and effort will be required to implement those. And that invariably is far in excess of the resources we've got. We then have to go through that list again and say, okay, in our estimation, this thing that is number four on this list is more important than the one that's number three, so we'll lift it up the list. And that's very much how it's done. We look at the items on the list. Some things can be simple to implement. Some things that seem simple, that's from the outside seem simple to implement, can be quite difficult to implement. So it's quite a long exercise, and it takes a lot of effort on the part of the developers to assess the amount of time involved in each of the sort of items that may be on our wish list. So our wish list varies quite a lot, and things that have been on our wish list for several years are still on our wish list. It doesn't mean to say that we don't place any better or lower value on them. It's just that as things have gone on through the years, it's been deemed that other things have been more important to do.
Well, please push for the Bluetooth mobile phone modem thing now that you've got the Bluetooth and things, and a hash key on the QWERTY keyboard. And no, the pound key isn't the hash key. It's not the same. The only way I got hash key was either by using a Bluetooth keyboard or by changing to computer braille, because the pound symbol is different. And the other thing I would say is infrared, anyway. Using a mobile phone as a modem through infrared, through GPRS, you know, with the star 99 hash thing. That's been possible since about 2003, at least, I think, or 4, maybe. And I sometimes do wonder why they haven't done it. I suppose, am I right in thinking that the reason PacMate can have things in it so much quicker and so much more easily is that because they just went with a sort of pocket Windows thing rather than actually building their own operating system? Is that why they can have things like MSN already?
Sort of. Although you need to be also aware that what QMember has actually done is they based the although they ported the KeySoft interface from KeySoft 2.x that was running under DOS, if I'm correct. And just port it to Windows CE to use whatever sources available on Windows CE. Both, in fact, all assistive technology devices, BrailleNote, PacMate, BrailleSense, VoiceSense, run under Windows CE operating system. And in case of Freedom Scientific, they chose to use Windows CE 4.2 in its mainstream form, which is Windows Mobile 2003. They have chose to use it to pursue mainstream technology, meaning that they put a mainstream software and hardware in there, and they put actual hardware on the infrared port that allows IRDA communications between PacMates and PDAs. And that's what they are going to do in the PacMate Omni series, which they're going to be releasing in September of this year. They are going to run under Windows Mobile 6.0, which actually runs under Windows CE 5.2. And they're going to have the standard thing that's found in pocket PCs. Although you need to be also aware that both BrailleNote and PacMate runs on underneath each interface, they have Windows CE. Same Windows CE, in fact.
Another thing too, maybe someone could also maybe email this to me off about, or like off the chat, or maybe on, I don't really care, but whatever. Is I found a version of KeySoft 2, I think it is, for DOS. And I just thought, well, maybe I'd just check this out, but Anyway, I tried and it said invalid INS file. Yeah.
He will try to actually install the key. Bro, no, you cannot install it. That's true. It shows an invalid INI file. That happens because what kind of Windows version do you have? You have XP. Although it runs in DOS mode, when KeySoft version 2 is actually optimized for Windows 95 and Windows 9X series.
So then do you have to run that in compatibility mode for 95, or how does that work?
Because it's a DOS version, yes, I believe you have to run in compatibility mode in 9X. It will run better in DOS if there's a version for that is. So if there are no further comments, I guess that will conclude the chat session that we had. I know that we had a maximum of 18 people joining us. Right now we have like 8 people remain, 8, 9 or 8 people remaining here. Anybody have some comments? The last minute comments? It's around 2:15 and I didn't expect this to go all the way like 2 hours and a half, 2.5 hours. I thought it's going to only last for 90 minutes, but due to the anticipation, it lasted like 150 minutes and so forth.
Just to say thank you to Morris for coming, and thank you, Joseph, for setting up the chat, and also something else I'd just like to pass back, if Morris could pass this back to the people who do the development. I think the battery life for the Braille Note is excellent, even after the recommended 18 months. I mean, I bought my Braille Note second-hand off somebody 4 years after he'd first got it, and the battery life was still really, really good. So whoever chose that battery did a good thing. But just, yeah, generally, thank you for everybody that's organized this chat session and made it possible.
And for me, as kind of a last suggestion, also, I noticed someone on the Braille list was suggesting having a version of KeySoft again for the PC as like translate a Word document or something.
Has been a wish list thing for some time as well. We had very good success in New Zealand of selling the old DOS KeySoft, so I'm a firm believer in its virtues on a PC. It's many years since we've done anything to the PC version of KeySoft, but I can tell you that it is still potentially on the wish list to have a PC-based version of KeySoft as well.
Two things. First of all, exactly what does the PC version of KeySoft do? I mean, does it make your desktop menu driven like KeySoft, or you know, what does it do for that? And second, someone a little while ago asked something about the converter for the Braille Note. If you could just private chat me, I don't know if you have already, but if you could do that, give me your email or whatever you wanted to say, that'd be good.
The main advantage of KeySoft that a lot of people see is it's just its consistency of operation. It's very easy to learn. It's got very good help. And so for a lot of elderly clients that lose their sight later in life, that are in a home situation where maybe there's sighted people in the house as well as the person that's losing their sight, we found in New Zealand that the PC-based version offered a very good solution. That it allowed them to use the same PC as the family we're using, and it basically just runs the KeySoft program on a PC. It takes over the screen, so you've got a fairly minimal display, in the same way that the KeyView displays. It those days it didn't have a lot of the features that KeySoft's got today, so it was really only the word processor in the file management, and it didn't have email, it didn't have the internet access or the media player, things like that. So it was the very first beginnings of KeySoft. KeySoft started off way back in about 1980s, and it was on the wee Epson-based HX20 machines, and then it went to the DOS-based Toshiba series, and we took it through all those Toshiba laptops, and then we released a version that would go on more generic PCs, and then it went through to the Keynote Companion range, and then the Braille Note was released in 2000, and all those sort of previous PC-based versions of Keysoft work stopped on those at that time. But we've always sort of seen a need for that type of product.
Okay, I got a really sort of a random question, I guess. I don't know if you'll know this or not, or if I'll have to talk to someone in programming, but if the Braille Note is basically Windows CE with Keysoft on a generic motherboard, would it be possible to get another motherboard further customized to what you wanted it to do, and then put the software that the current Braille Note has onto, basically just put everything from, say, an M-Power onto a motherboard with different features on it? Would that work at all, or how would you go about doing that, if it's even possible?
A software needs to be, especially in Windows CE, needs to be compiled for a specific CPU architecture. The one that is used in Classic is MIPS. The one that is used in PK is StrongArm. The one that is used in Emperor is Xscale. If you purchase a generic motherboard with x86 or x64 processor, if you try to run Keysoft, it'll give you like illegal operation or not supported message, especially in x64 process, because they use 64-bit operation. So you need to actually convert the Keysoft code to use a specific software architecture, whether it be MIPS, StrongArm, Xscale, x86, x64, etc., etc. And especially in x64, it is quite easy, from what I heard, to actually run it, but it'll be quite complex to actually run. And another bit of like a side note, MIPS is actually a 64-bit processor, and Keysoft, actually MIPS is running in 32-bit mode for Keysoft to run. That's what is going on. And CE itself is 32-bit, so a good thing is that 32-bit is actually, CE kernel is written to run under MIPS, ARM, SuperH, and x86 processors. That'll be, I believe, it can run with some recompilation of Keysoft to use a particular CPU architecture, whether it be Xscale, x86, x64, etc.
So it'd be possible, if you had the tools to recompile everything, sort of going back to the SDK that we were saying earlier. All right, that's good to know. Thanks.
So I guess that does it for the chat. Okay, I'd like to thank everybody who came here for the chat. I'd like to especially thank Charles Lapierre from Sendero Group, who came to talk about GPS 4.0. Maurice Sloan, who came to represent Humanware, and other people including Alex Parks, Derek Roberts, Tiffany Manosh, who tried to communicate with us, Mary Ellen Earls, Matthew was here, Mike was here, Albert Sanchez, and others who came by to join us for the chat. Okay, I'd like to thank everybody for joining us for the chat, and have a good day. That does it for today's recording, and we're now in the post-chat hour.